You're listening to the Life-Changing Discipleship Podcast. Here's the deal. If you make disciples by sitting around and talking, you shouldn't be surprised when your disciples sit around and talk and talk and talk. This is the podcast for those weary of just talking and ready to start activating in the mission Jesus gave us to change the world. The Life-Changing Discipleship Podcast, where disciples and disciple makers gather to grow and go together. Here's your host, Dr. Matt Friedemann.
Hey, disciple makers, remember now, the place for a man, for a woman complete in all their powers is in the fight. And somewhere right now today, somewhere in the world, making disciples of the nation. So stay tuned, stay encouraged. We have a rendezvous with destiny. All right, friends, good to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us here on the podcast. And boy, a lot of people have been listening in lately, and we appreciate that. Always remember, if you can, just share this podcast with everybody you know. If you get a chance to fill out an evaluation of it, our favorite star is five stars, if you can remember that. So thank you for that. And always remember, check out our books at Amazon.com, particularly the newest one, written with Tom McCall and my son, Caleb Friedemann, called The Doctrine of Good Works. Now, this whole program is based on a discipleship model called the 5Q methodology of discipleship. So check that out on the web, too, and a bunch of other books, too. We think you'll enjoy all of them. I want to remind you, this broadcast is brought to you by Wesley Biblical Seminary. And I've been here 37 years, love this place. I am passionate about this place. I think we've got a place in the world that is unique. And we'd very much love for you to become a partner with Wesley Biblical Seminary to reach out to us and say, listen, I want to talk more about how I can get more involved. One of the ways you can get involved is enroll for classes. We have a bachelor's degree, a lay institute. By the way, that's going gangbusters. We have a lay institute. We have a bachelor's degree. We have the course of study, but the Global Methodist Church is lined up by the hundreds to take our course of study classes. We hope that you'll be doing that. And then, of course, we also have master's degrees, a Master of Divinity degree. We have a Doctor of Ministry degree. Lots of opportunities for you to learn and grow and go to the next level. Also, lots of opportunities for you to help fund us so that we can give this out to as many people as possible. So we are a disciple-making enterprise here at Wesley Biblical Seminary. Come join us. All right. I want you to know that I've got a Substack page out there somewhere. So it's Freedy's Substack. Check that out as soon as you can. And there's a lot of archives there. You can go back and read anything you might have missed up to this point. Whole point is we got a lot of stuff out there, and we hope that you're taking advantage of those things. Now, I wish I could say right now something that I really can't say, and that is I am an athlete. Truth is, I used to be an athlete. Right now, I try to stay in shape as best I can. I try to eat right. Fact of the matter is, I'm much bigger in weight than I ought to be, but I try to eat vegan. So no meat and dairy products. When I'm out to eat, it's really hard to do. I'm going out to eat an awful lot these days, but in as much as I can control what I do, I try to be a vegan. And by the way, the reason I do that, it's just so good for your heart. If you're eating plants, you can put heart disease in reverse. I am absolutely convinced of it, and the data actually shows as much. So there's so many really good things about eating that way. I lift weights just a bit, but really what I do these days is swing a kettlebell, which is, it's weight-bearing exercise. It includes some pushing and some pulling and some swinging, and I just love the kettlebell. But having said that, that's what I do to stay in shape. I would not call myself an athlete, but I used to be. We went to the University of Kansas. When I was in high school, I was through the discus. Now, I wanted to be a quarterback, wanted to be the point guard, wanted to be a great wrestler. They wrestled in the Midwest and was really no good at any of those things. But I did have one extremely, extremely unusual talent, and that was I could throw a discus. And in high school, I was third in the nation. I had the third longest throw in the nation. Showed up at some national meets, got second at one of the national meets. And so I was pretty good. I got recruited to go to the University of Kansas. And there, eventually, I got to be Big Eight champion. I was named an All-American at the University of Kansas. I threw a throw 1 year that was second in the nation. And that throw qualified me to go to the Olympic trials. So When I say I used to be an athlete, that's what I'm talking about. Used to be that guy back then. When I was doing the athletic thing, I was starting to read books that were a little bit more profound than simply discus, you know, how to throw the discus or how to get better at lifting weights. And one of the books I picked up was Celebration of Discipline, written by Richard Foster. And it really turned me on to a lot of things that were basically what I would call today the means of grace. He calls them, these disciplines. I would prefer to call them means of grace, whatever you call them. You pretty much have to do them if you're going to be someone that's enjoying your salvation today, that your life is expanding in kingdom ways. Having said that, I read the second book that he put out, and I believe that book was Freedom of Simplicity. And there's something in that that really captured my imagination. And one of them, one of the chapters he writes about the Athletai Dei. And the Athletai Dei were the athletes of God. And he talked about the Desert Fathers. Those are the ones called the athletes of God. And how in the fourth century, Christianity became popular in the Roman Empire. And they thought there's nothing more dangerous than a popular Christianity. So they fled for the caves. They went to the deserts. And they became known as the Desert Fathers, those people who fled from the popularity, from the busyness of Christianity, and just wound up in caves and in deserts trying to live their life out. In many ways, they were heroes of the faith. In many ways, kind of disappointing because the cities, which they fled, really needed them. But nonetheless, Foster talks about the kinds of questions they asked of themselves and the kind of people they became as they lived in the desert. That became really fascinating to me, the athletes of God. And I began to wonder, what would that mean for someone today that, you know, I don't want to flee to the desert. I don't mind fleeing to the prison, preaching the gospel. I don't mind fleeing to the abortion clinic to say, let me stand out here for the sake of righteousness. That's what I want. I want to flee. I want to run to the sound of the pain. But nonetheless, is there something I could pick up from these guys called the Athletai Dei? And is there something that I need to add to my life, maybe even take away from my life, so that I can become a better athlete of God? Now, with all that being understood, you can only imagine where I'm going to go in Scripture right now. Paul writes a letter to the church at Corinth, and he thought that it was pretty important for them to know about what an athletic or a muscular Christianity would look like. And in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24 and following, I'm just going to read you this paragraph. "Don't you know," he says, "that the runners in a stadium all race, but only one receives a prize? So run in such a way to win the prize. Now, everyone who competes exercises self-control in everything. They do it to receive a perishable crown, but we an imperishable crown. So I do not run like one who runs aimlessly or box like one beating the air. Instead, I discipline my body and bring it under strict control so that after preaching to others, I myself will not be disqualified." There's a lot there, and I'm not going to tear that to pieces here for you today, but it got me to thinking something that I do think is pretty important for all of us to consider, and that is, what does it mean for me to be a better Athletai Dei, a better athlete of God? If that's a metaphor we're going to use, how can I be the best athlete for Jesus I can possibly be? So it caused me this week to think back on my life when I was an athlete. Now, I tell you what, I'd be a much better athlete today if I had all these things working for me. But I just wondered, as I look back at my University of Kansas experience, what is there that I could apply in those years to these years as I'm getting older, but I want to be more the athlete of God now than ever before? How could I apply some of these things? So I just thought in these ways. And I got really, I got five things here. I'm not even saying these are the best five things. These are just the five things I threw together real quick, remembering my experience. So when I went to Kansas, I spent a couple years working out with the track and field team. And I found my progress not very substantial. And one day I found out about a guy named Keith Kephart. And we call him Kep. Kep was a great bodybuilder, but that means he lifted lots of weights. But he was also the strength coach for the University of Kansas. Now, I can tell you, he was an awesome strength coach. In fact, they gave out the award for National Strength Coach of the Year. You can't win it twice. So It basically means the best, everybody who perceives the best is, that's the guy that's going to win it first. And who is the second best strength coach in the nation? That's who we're going to give it second. And Keith Kep won the award the second time. And it was a great honor for him and a great honor for the University of Kansas and a great honor of all of us who considered us to be his friends. So let me just describe to you here what I learned from Keith Kephart. First off, if you're really going to be great, you're going to have a good workout partner. He was my workout partner. I went there and he decided, I don't know why he let me do this, but I asked him, could I lift weights while you're lifting weights? I didn't ask him straight up, can I lift weights with you? Just while you're lifting, can I lift with you or around you or just be in the room? And he said, yes. I said, so what does that take? He says, twice a day. And so I had to go to the gym 5:30 a.m. and work out with him. And then we would come back in the afternoon. I forget what time, at probably about 2, maybe 2 or 3 o'clock. And we'd work out again in the afternoon. So twice a day lifting weights. And honestly, he became my workout partner. And what an extraordinary opportunity that was for me, because here is a guy that was strong, much stronger than I was, and much more disciplined, much more intense about it all. But I kind of yoked myself, to use biblical nomenclature, I kind of yoked myself to him, and boy, did my progress ever take off. But it dawned on me, that's true spiritually as well. If you're going to be a better weightlifter, you need a workout partner. If you're going to lose weight, typically what Weight Watchers and all the rest of them have found out, you've got to be linked in with someone who's doing the same sort of thing. Is that true all cases all the time? No. Most cases most of the time? Yes. If you want to lose weight, you need to do it with someone who's going to lose with you and hold you accountable for doing it. It's important to have a workout partner, y'all. Now, this is important spiritually. Maybe more important spiritually than it is even physically. And that's this. If you're going to make all the progress you need to make to grow in Christ's likeness through spiritual disciplines, you're going to need a partner, maybe multiple partners. You're going to have some people who you are linked to, yoked to, who can hold you accountable for that progress. Now, this is what John Wesley found out all the way back in the 18th century. He says, man, we're out there preaching, and people are responding to our preaching. What we need is, however, after we're done preaching, to get interested people together in societies and in classes and in bands. In other words, we need for them to get together so that they can make progress spiritually. He says, and if we don't do it, we're going to have problems. I think it was Pembrokeshire, some place in England called Pembrokeshire, where he said 9 in 10 of the once awakened in Pembrokeshire are now faster asleep than ever because we didn't establish workout partners, essentially, after we left. And because we didn't, they're worse off than if we'd never gone. So I would just suggest to you, workout partners are a huge link together with people, not just people that'll study the Bible with you or pray for you during the week, but people who will say, let's work out, let's pray, let's hold each other accountable for daily prayer life, for daily Bible study, for daily Bible memorization, and on it goes. Let's hold one another accountable for these kinds of things. And I might add, so very important to this program is not only just for the works of piety that we just mentioned, but for works of mercy as well. Let's hold each other accountable for going to places like abortion clinics or to places like prison, or to places like an elementary school where we could do a Bible club. All those things my church does. And to say those things and a lot of other things as well, just say, let's link up to go serve him. And when you put those two things together in groups, individuals within those groups grow like crazy. They grow into a Christ likeness that they never would have known before the workout partner. So what is extremely important to athletic, especially athleti dei, discipline, and shall we say fruit, it's going to be workout partners. Number two, sacrificial consistency. I just noticed, man, in those first 2 years at the University of Kansas, I was working out really hard, but I wasn't quite as consistent as I was when I got together with Kep, because Kep was extremely good. Twice a day, 6 days a week, bang, 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 bang. He just kept after it. And really, there was no excuse to miss unless you had some kind of crazy pulled muscle or something like that. Maybe a broken bone, sure. But other than that, you just kept going and going and going. And consistency was extremely, extremely important. And so we built a lot of muscle together because of that consistency. Now, I say sacrificial consistency in so much as say, Kep said you got to be here at 5:30 a.m. and again in the afternoon. Well, that's sacrificial, y'all. That's a lot of time. Nobody else is doing that. In fact, when I went in, I just said, I don't care if I'm the best in the nation. I want to be the hardest working discus thrower in the nation. And frankly, without hubris, I'll just say I probably was. Because I worked out more, I threw more, I was in that workout dynamic, I think probably, I don't know, there's no way to know, but I think probably more than anybody else. I was just into it. But it's because of the workout partners, and it's because I set in motion a sacrifice that became normal for me, all right? So the sacrificial consistency is huge. And I think spiritually, same thing. What are you really sacrificing time-wise, energy-wise, emotionally? What are you sacrificing? And we'll do so again and again and again across months, years, decades in order to be Christ-like. See, most of us want to say, hey, I accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior, and he transformed my life. But we don't want to put in the months, the years, the decades of hard work that it really takes to expand a salvation that is pleasing to Jesus. That sacrificial consistency is huge. So number one, if you want to be an athlete of God today and really reach your potential as an athlete, get a workout partner, maybe several. Sacrificial consistency. And then this, confidence without hubris. Now, I don't want to be the cockiest guy around. I don't want to think I'm good. What I want is knowing what I know that I know. And I want to act in confidence. And so it's amazing. After you began working out with Kep Hart, you started striding towards a field house. We worked out in Allen Fieldhouse, the very famous basketball arena. That's where we worked out. Had a football complex next to it, and that's where we worked out. So we worked out in Allen Fieldhouse, and I'm just going to tell you something. When you knew you had maybe the best workout part in the nation, and when you knew you were sacrificially consistent, you worked into a confidence, not a cockiness, not a pride, just a confidence. And it made a difference in how you walked, made a difference in how you talked, made a difference in how you related to other people, made a difference in how you viewed not only this year, next year, but the 10 years from now. It made you more confident with everybody, including, I mean, you know, I'm a guy, I'm interested in girls, including with women. You just had a growing confidence about everything. You know what? I think spiritually speaking, probably the same thing. Got workout partners. You got sacrificial consistency. Guess what's going to start happening? You're going to begin walking with confidence. By the way, the word confidence comes from fide, faith, con, with faith. You are going to be more faithful than ever before, and start walking in that faith, not with pride, not with hubris, but with confidence, with faith. And it makes a difference on everything you do. I notice it as an athlete at the University of Kansas, and I know it today. Once you start doing these things, now, the way that gets done is what you eat and sleep. So I will say, you're working out for a while and you start noticing that when I eat certain foods, I come here a lot more vibrant and I build a lot more muscle. And so you learned, and Kep was willing to teach you what you needed to eat. And then he taught you that muscle grows best when you're sleeping. So yeah, you can say, yeah, I'm a slacker and I need 10 hours a day. But the fact of the matter is, the more you slept, the better off you were with your musculature. And so I would just say this eating and sleeping dynamic was huge. And I would say same thing true of folks that want to grow spiritually. What you ingest. And so what we've always said here at on the Life Changing Discipleship with Matt Friedman, we just say, listen, get together the works of piety and the works of mercy and ingest those. That is your diet. That is where your strength comes from. That is where you're going to develop into somebody most impressive, because you're going to be working out. You're going to be doing so with a partner. You're going to be doing it with sacrificial consistency. And as you do it, you walk with faith and you will be most impressive, but you've got to eat well and you've got to get your rest. Y'all, I want you to know this whole shalom thing, this whole peace thing, it means substantially you need to eat well, ingest well, take in lots of prayer, take in lots of Bible study. Make sure that you're fasting. Make sure that you're spending time in groups. Make sure you're doing a work of mercy, but you don't have to overdo it. You can do it relaxed. You can do it with taking some time off. You can do it with something called a Sabbath. And that's why we're really big on rest on the Sabbath. And I even think there's parts of a day. Throw out your TV set, y'all, and start resting during those times, reading during those times, talking with people during those times. You say, throw out the TV set? What is that? Listen, there's not a whole lot screens do for us, friends. Get rid of your screens and really start enjoying your time as you are eating and growing in the Lord. And so, the last thing I would suggest to you is simply this. You need to make sure that you're doing all the basics necessary to have a disciplined life, to have a life filled with the means of grace, but there's always going to come some new insight or maybe even a new habit or the way to do the habit you're doing just a little bit different. And so I want you to know basically what I've done in devotions I've done for the last 25 or 30 years, but there's always different things within the discipline. A different way to study the Bible, a different way to pray, a different way to approach God, a different way to fast, just all kinds of things. I'm all the time changing and yet staying basic. And I found out the same thing with my discipline in life, as far as spiritually speaking. That's what I was doing back at the University of Kansas. Always something new I'm learning. Something new about how to spin in the discus. Something new about how to release the discus. Something new about weights I needed to lift. So there was always a basic program throwing the discus, but always something new. And you always want to be a learner and someone who changes because of the things God's bringing into your life that are new and different. Always want to hold on to orthodoxy. Always want to hold on to that personal relationship. Enjoying the presence of Jesus in your life. But at the end of the day, recognize there's always going to be some new nuances that are going to come along with all that. It's true with the discus throw and athletics of all kinds, and it's also true spiritually. Now, I thought with all of this, is there a danger? And oh my goodness, there's all kinds of dangers, and we can go to a whole list. But the biggest danger that happened to me as I was working out for the discus throw is particularly in my last year, I forgot why I was lifting weights. I was really getting good at something called the squat. Now, I don't know if you know anything about weightlifting, but the squat is you put a bunch of weight on your back. You go all the way down, almost into a full squat, not a half squat, not a three, all the way down that you can go and then come up with the weight. And I was pretty good at this. I mean, the squat was my lift. I couldn't bench very well, couldn't do military press that good. Lots of things I couldn't do, but boy, oh boy. For the discus throw, by the way, the squat's the most important lift anyway. So there I was doing squats, and I mean, I was getting good. My last year, I was getting better and better and better. My whole thing is I want to put 700 pounds on the bar and squat it. And I was going for it, going for it, going for it, and I forgot. Matt, you're not doing this to lift 700 pounds. You were doing this right now so that you can throw the discus further. And I didn't have a great season my last year because I was too focused on the means of grace and not the Christ-likeness that the means were supposed to bring me to. So by Christ-likeness, I'm just saying for the discus throw, I wanted to throw far, wanted to be the national champion, and I lost sight because I got so wrapped up. Now, there's some other people that got wrapped up in the means of grace and forgot that they were supposed to be holy as he is holy, and that was the Pharisees. Oh, they loved all the habits. They loved all the disciplines. They loved all the means, but they forgot. Somewhere along the line, they forgot they were supposed to be holy as the Father in heaven is holy. And guys, at the end of the day, we've got to keep in the end. Keep the end in mind. And the end is, I want more and more and more to be like him. I want a more intimate relationship with him than ever before. I want to go where he wants me to go, do what he wants me to do, be what he wants me to be. I want to give what he wants me to give. I want him. And if you can remember that while you're doing all these means, your life is going to be extraordinary. If you forget the end, you slip. If you remember the end, but you don't want to do the means, you're going to slip. You're not going to get there. You're not going to make the progress you need to. But I'm going to tell you, the Athleti Dei have taught me a few things. And that is, if you're going to be an athlete of God, read this passage in 1 Corinthians 9 and keep in mind what makes athletes great. And real quick review, it's workout partners. It's sacrificial consistency. It's confidence without hubris. It's eating and sleeping the right way. And it's always remember the basics, plus always be changing to the new insight that the Lord is giving you. All right, it's a wrap. It's been an honor to have you listening to Life Changing Discipleship Podcast with Matt Friedemann. Tell others about our podcast and remember this. My wife thanks you. My daughter thanks you. My sons and their wives thank you. And I can assure you that I thank you for listening to Life Changing Discipleship today. Love God, live clean, keep the faith, make disciples, and God bless you, dear friends. We'll see you back here real soon.